I'd like to read a passage from the 12th chapter, book of Revelation, this morning. Thank you again, certainly, for the privilege of speaking in this church, from this pulpit. It's been a real blessing to be with you again this year, as it was last year for me. I'm grateful for this opportunity. And we do trust that you will remember us in your prayers. There at the Institute for Creation Research in California, we have a great work to do, and we have many opponents, and so we certainly need your prayers. And if you would like to be on our mailing list for our monthly newsletter, I'd be glad for you to let me know, and we'll do that. In Revelation chapter 12, beginning at verse 7, "And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength, and the kingdom of our God, and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death." Now, I suppose that the subject dinosaurs and the deluge is rather unlikely a subject for a Sunday morning church service, and yet it may be singularly appropriate. I suppose that you know that the evolutionary philosophy has captured our modern society, our educational institutions. It's predominant in the thinking of by far the great majority of our leaders. And yet it's a false philosophy. It seems to have sort of deceived the whole world. It's utterly false and yet almost completely successful. Now, the God of this world is Satan, and the whole world lies in the wicked one. The God of this world has blinded the minds of them who believe not, Scripture says. And if there is a deception which has deceived the whole world, it must have its source in Satan, the wicked one. And here we're told that Satan, that great red dragon, that old serpent, has deceived the whole world and is to be cast down. Now, I'm suggesting the thesis that the very concept of the dragon as personifying Satan finds its root in the figure of the mighty dinosaur that once ruled the earth. Isn't it significant? It seems to me that it is, that not only in the Bible, but in all the traditions and legends, early histories of men around the world, every nation, whether it's China or Greece or Egypt, or the tribes, wherever we encounter the traditions of men, early in their histories, they have records of dragons. Now, where did all of them get this peculiar notion of these great, fearsome reptilian creatures? Well, I think it was because they were familiar with the dinosaur. Now, the evolutionist, of course, immediately objects and says, well, that couldn't be because dinosaurs evolved 200 million years ago and became extinct about 100 million years ago. And man only evolved perhaps about a million years ago. So man and the dinosaur never lived together at all. Now, according to the standard evolutionary approach to history, of course, the earth evolved about 5 billion years ago and life about 3 billion years. And then more and more complex forms of life. There were invertebrates in the Cambrian period only, and then there were primitive vertebrates a little later, and then finally fishes, and then amphibians, and then the great reptiles of the Mesozoic era, including the great dinosaurs. These ruled the world for 100 million years. They were exterminated by some unknown cause at the end of the Cretaceous period, and then there ensued the age of birds and mammals. And finally, man, in his modern form, appeared about a million years ago. Now, of course, no one was there to record all this history, so a good question is, how do we know that these things really happened? And the answer is by the fossil record, the record of the remains of bones and shells and cracks and other remains of animals and plants that once lived on the earth, died and were buried in the sediments which later turned into rock. Now we find them in our mountains and around the world in the crust of the earth. And this gives us the record of the gradual evolution of life on the earth over the geological ages. And according to this view, of course, man is a very late arrival on the scene. Now, the significant point about all of this is that this fossil record is the only real basis for the theory of evolution. All of the other so-called evidences for evolution are strictly circumstantial evidence. The small changes that we see take place in the world today are really much better explained in terms of variation within the kinds, because we never see a transformation of one kind into another kind. And the similarities that we see between different organisms, the similarities between man and the ape, for example, these do not prove evolution from a common ancestor. These really indicate creation by a common designer who created similar structures for similar functions and different structures for different functions. Similarities and small changes certainly don't prove evolution. All of these can be explained just as well. In fact, we would contend much better in terms of an original special creation of basic kinds with provision for variation within the kinds, and with similar structures for similar functions and similar environments in the same world, and different structures for different functions. So none of these types of evidence prove evolution at all. For the real proof for the evolutionary theory, we have to go to the fossil record. And so this record of the fossils becomes extremely significant in this conflict between these two great worldviews of evolutionary naturalistic humanism, man-centered worldview, and biblical divine creationism, the worldview which centers in God. And these are the two worldviews, the two religions of mankind today. They embrace all aspects of reality. These are not just trivial issues. This is a very fundamental conflict. It's a conflict between God and Satan, between the God-centered view of reality and the autonomous, man-centered, creature-centered view of reality. And the key to the whole conflict rests in this record of the fossils. And when we think of fossils, as a matter of fact, when most people, most laymen, think of evolution, why, probably the first thing that comes into their mind is the dinosaur. Why, our children have been studying books with pictures of dinosaurs since they were in kindergarten. Dinosaurs and cavemen. I think dinosaurs perhaps even more than the cavemen. Well, other fossils also are significant, but these dinosaurs sort of personify the fossil record and the whole evolutionary picture of life for most people. And these exotic, monstrous, horrible creatures, these dinosaurs, They just seem so different from our modern world, so alien to anything that we've ever experienced, that somehow this just impresses us that the world of the dinosaurs must have been long ago and far away and has no real connection with the world in which we live today. And so this lends great weight to the idea that the Earth is very, very old and life has changed drastically through the geological ages. And yet, if the Bible is true, and certainly it's the Word of God and is true, dinosaurs and men and all creatures must have lived together. Because we read that in 6 days, God made heaven and earth and the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Everything that God ever made, He made in the 6 days of creation. And that includes man, and includes all the beasts of the field, and the monsters of the deep, and all things were made in the 6 days. Well, but people say dinosaurs and man didn't live together. Yes, they did. Why, anybody ought to know. You've read Alley-Oop and the Flintstones. But seriously, we do have an increasing amount of evidence today that the whole fossil record is simply a record of one world, just as our present world in which all types of plants and animals live together. So the fossil world was a previous world in which all types of plants and animals existed, lived together, and were buried in the sediments which are now preserved for us in the rocks of the earth's crust. But let me read just an excerpt or two from books about dinosaurs. I've heard people say that some Christians say they don't really believe that dinosaurs ever existed, that this is just some story that somebody made up. But they really existed. There have been an abundance of dinosaur bones found and dinosaur tracks. Let me just read one or two. Dr. Colbert is probably the nation's leading authority on dinosaurs, and he's written many books and articles on the subject, and I'm just quoting from a few typical examples out of many. Here he refers to a dinosaur graveyard in New Mexico. He says, as the layer was exposed, it revealed a most remarkable dinosaurian graveyard in which there were literally scores of skeletons piled on top of one another, interlaced with one another. It would appear that some local catastrophe had overtaken these dinosaurs so that they all died together and were buried together. They were found in the greatest profusion, piled on top of one another with heads and tails and feet and legs, often inextricably mixed in a jackstraw puzzle of bones. And this is typical. Whenever we find one dinosaur bone, it seems we find lots of them, and there may be many individuals of the same species, young and old, or there may be many species together, and just all mixed together, evidently, in every case, buried there by some catastrophe. Now, it would take a catastrophe to bury a dinosaur. The dinosaurs just didn't lay down and die, because if they had just, like any other animal, if mere death had taken place, their bones would soon have decayed and gone to the dust. But to become fossilized, they must not only have died, but died suddenly, and been buried, and buried rapidly, and buried permanently. And always you find these evidences of catastrophe, and generally hydraulic catastrophe. They were buried by some type of flood. Here's another one. This is in Alberta, Canada. Innumerable bones and many fine skeletons of dinosaurs and other associated reptiles have been quarried from these badlands. Particularly in the 15-mile stretch of the river to the east of Steveville, a stretch that is a veritable dinosaurian graveyard. Here's one in East Africa. This site contains an enormous number of fossils, far more than could be carried off by one expedition. There was much speculation as to how the remains of so many dinosaurs came to be concentrated in beds otherwise rather poor in fossil remains. Some German scientists suggested that the animals were overwhelmed by a natural catastrophe. And this sort of thing could be multiplied all around the world. Such dinosaur graveyards are literally found in every continent. I'm not sure about Antarctica, but certainly all of the others. And not only dinosaur graveyards, but elephant graveyards and hippopotamus graveyards, and great masses, some places millions of fish fossils found together, buried often in contorted positions, and sometimes with the coloring still on them, and even sometimes with the soft parts still on them, millions of fossil fish and all kinds of animals found buried in the sediments. Now, it seems like it's just sort of obvious that whenever we find such phenomena as these, a catastrophe must have taken place. The normal, slow, gradual, uniform rates of deposition that we now experience in the deltas and in the other places where sediments are deposited couldn't possibly account for such tremendous quantities of fossil bones as these. So wherever we find great beds of fossils, we find evidence of catastrophe. And we find this all over the world and in every so-called geological age. Catastrophism is necessary to explain the fossil record. Now, therefore, we begin to see that we don't necessarily have to think in terms of long, slow ages of development to understand this fossil record. If each deposit speaks of rapid burial, a local catastrophe, why can't all of them together speak of rapid burial and a worldwide catastrophe? As a matter of fact, there are no great boundaries between the various ages. There used to be thought that there were. But now it's known that each age merges imperceptibly into another age, so that there's no real distinction from one age to another. We also know that there are literally every type of series that are found at different places in the fossil record. They're not all in the same order by any means, and the complete series is never available anywhere. So we don't really find any evidence of slow, gradual evolution around the world from one simple form into a more complex and more complex forms. This just isn't found. What we do find is a wide variety of types and series of fossil formations, and in every case, evidence of catastrophe. And so why can't we begin to think in terms of one great worldwide cataclysm? As a matter of fact, this was the view held of the fossils by all of the early scientists, the founders of the science of geology. This was displaced in fairly modern times, the past century and a half, by the view of uniformitarianism and evolutionism. Now, the cataclysmic interpretation of the fossils was never disproved. It was simply rejected in favor of the evolutionary interpretation. But all the actual facts can be understood in terms of cataclysm. Well, now, if that's so, and it is so, then we can seriously think of the possibility that all of them lived together. Not only the dinosaurs, but man and the trilobites and all things. Now, there are an increasing number of evidences of this. Not only the fact that all of the early tribes have records of dragons, and there must be a cause for an effect, and this is certainly a worldwide phenomenon, and therefore must have a common worldwide cause. But also, increasingly, we find evidence in the fossil record itself. For example, in a number of places, dinosaur footprints are found along with human footprints. Especially in Central Texas, and some of you are familiar with this, but perhaps not everyone, there have been excavated, not only early in this century, but in just the last few years, considerable numbers of fossil human footprints in exactly the same strata as dinosaur footprints. The state of Texas has even made a dinosaur state park out of this area in Central Texas on the Biloxi River, because so many dinosaur footprints have been found there. And there's no question that these are dinosaur footprints. They're great, deep depressions in the limestones. And there's no question that they're dinosaur footprints of several different kinds of dinosaurs. But it isn't so widely known, and it isn't publicized at all, that there are human footprints found. Some of them are giant tracks. Some of them up to 20, 22, maybe some 25 inches in length. Others are normal-sized human tracks. And there are several locations, and many of these have just been recently excavated, so that there's no possibility of their having been carved by Indians or somebody. They were excavated, the overlying strata were removed, and there they are. And there's no question of being misunderstood as to what these are. Well, there may be. We're not absolutely certain that a man made them because nobody saw a man make them, but at least the tracks look like human tracks. And there's a series of them. There's a right foot and a left foot and a right foot and left foot. And several places like that where that occurs. And in the same location, there are dinosaur tracks. And in at least two locations, the dinosaur tracks and the human tracks actually overlie each other. And there's just really no question at all but that at least these human tracks were made by some kind of a bipedal creature whose feet looked exactly like human feet. If they weren't human feet, they were a reasonable facsimile thereof. You can put your foot in it and it fits like a house shoe. We've tried to discuss these with various geologists. We had three geologists down there looking at them a little over a year ago. I think I may have mentioned this last year when I was here. And they examined them. We had three creationist geologists and three uniformitarian geologists. The creationist geologists all were completely convinced they were human tracks. The others were not so convinced. But one of them said, well, he knew they were tracks of a biped creature, but couldn't be human because man didn't live at the time of the dinosaurs. And so therefore what they were was some kind of an unknown dinosaur with human feet or human-like feet. And could be, I suppose, but nobody's ever seen such a thing or any other evidence of it. And one of the other geologists said, well, they could be human tracks. He wasn't ready to say that they were, but he did say this, and I thought this was significant. He says, now, geologists have simply got to quit sweeping this kind of evidence under the rug. We've got to examine it and see what it means. And he said they could be human tracks. And the other geologist said, well, he was convinced they were human tracks. They couldn't be anything else. But he said, what this means is that man evolved much earlier than we thought before, or else the dinosaurs persisted much longer than we thought before, and we have to revise our geologic timetable. In any case, man and the dinosaur, he thought, lived together. But there's a great deal of other evidence coming to light. Let me read just a note from from a magazine published by the state of Arizona some years ago. This was about 20 years ago, in fact. On the Havasupai Canyon in Arizona, near the Grand Canyon, high up on the canyon wall, about 20 feet above the present bed of the canyon, were found a number of pictographs made by an Indian tribe or some other early tribe. And among these pictographs, I'm quoting now, there were wall pictures showing dinosaurs, elephants, ibex, and so forth, as well as human forms. One drawing is of an elephant attacking a human. If the size of the elephant corresponds to the modern elephant, and if the drawing is to scale, the man was 18 feet high. Well, we won't discuss whether there were giants or not, but of course he could have had a scaffold or something to get up 20 feet on the canyon wall to draw the picture. Didn't have to be necessarily 18 feet high to do it, but at any rate, there was a dinosaur pictograph there. So this primitive man, whoever it was that made the picture, the elephant doesn't live there either nowadays, but certainly the dinosaur doesn't. But he had seen a dinosaur. It's a good picture of a dinosaur, a good sketch of a dinosaur. And not only in the Grand Canyon area, but here was from a newspaper article 2 years ago in the Los Angeles Herald Examiner of a discovery in South Africa. A fantastic mystery has developed over a set of cave paintings found in the Gorazamzi Hills, 25 miles from Salisbury, for the paintings include a brontosaurus. The 67-foot, 30-ton lizard-like creature scientists believe became extinct millions of years before man appeared. And yet, the experts agree that these bushmen who made the paintings back in Rhodesia from about 1500 B.C., they think it was, always painted from life. And not only were there dinosaur pictographs there, but elephants, hippopotami, bucks, giraffes, bears, other animals, but including the dinosaur. And still more recently, interesting report came to light out in Utah. This is quoting from the newspaper. People were searching for minerals in the Dakota Sandstone in Utah, and this is a Mesozoic era formation in which dinosaur bones have been found. And as a matter of fact, the Dinosaur National Monument is in this formation. And while cutting back through the hill, bulldozers cut that back through a 50-foot hill, 50-foot high and well back in, and way down in the middle of it, 50-foot from the surface, and well back into the interior, a remarkable discovery was made. And just quoting from a bit of this, they found first a tooth that was immediately recognized as human. Further searching by the party soon brought to light several human bone fragments, including an upper jaw section. And then later, they uncovered enough of what later proved to be the parts of two human skeletons, enough to verify that he had indeed located the source of the scattered pieces. And they went on and found at least two human skeletons, complete, other fragments. These were buried way back in the interior in the Dakota Sandstone, a dinosaur formation. No evidence at all that there was any disturbance. To all appearances, the bones had been buried by normal processes of deposition, along with the sand that later became the sandstone matrix enclosing them. The geologist who examined it said it couldn't be because man didn't live at that time. So what must have happened, they said, was 1,000 years or so ago, some Indians crawled into a cave and the cave collapsed, and then they were found, but there was no evidence of any cave collapse. or any other kind of a disturbance, to all the appearances, it looked as though they'd been buried by normal processes. Well, there are many other similar anomalous fossils being found. This is one of our research projects right now at the Institute, along with our search for the Ark that we discussed the other night. Another project is the search for anomalous fossils, fossils that are out of place in the geological column. And many of these are coming to light. Not only have dinosaur or human remains been found in the dinosaur age, Cretaceous, Mesozoic era formations, but also, let me just mention some others that have been found. There's been a clay figurine, a carved figure, found in Pliocene formations and in coal beds. All sorts of things have been found in coal. One well-documented case was where a piece of coal was broken open and a beautifully formed gold necklace was found in it. Another place where an iron pot was found in a coal bed, which was dated as Pennsylvanian, about 300 million years ago. A miner in West Virginia told me one time that he had found in the coal mine a perfectly fossilized human leg. There's been a well-documented coalized skull found in Europe. This was mentioned in our book, The Genesis Flood, some years ago. Another miner said that he and his crew had found deep in a very deep coal mine, as they traced out a vein of coal, they'd come suddenly up against, at the end of the coal vein, a perfectly constructed concrete block wall. All kinds of anomalies have been found and then sort of, well, swept under the rug, as it were, and you don't read much about them. And some of them may not be true. We're trying to trace them out and document them to see whether or not they are. But enough such strange phenomena have been found to bring into serious question the whole idea of the 500 million year development of the fossil beds, because we find evidence of human occupation and human life in all of them. Even the oldest one, the Cambrian period, supposedly recorded only in terms of marine invertebrate fossils, especially the index fossil known as the trilobite, is no exception, because several years ago in Utah, in trilobite Cambrian beds, was found a rather well-formed fossil of a human sandal print, not only a barefoot track, but a human track wearing a sandal. And if it wasn't a sandal, and this wasn't carved either, it was opened up unexpectedly on a cleavage plane, and there it was. If this wasn't a human track, then nobody knows what it is. It certainly looks in every way like it. Well, we believe that there's an increasing amount of evidence that man was represented in all the so-called geological ages. Either man is very old, a billion years old, or the geological ages are all one age. They represent the age of man. And, of course, this is what the Bible teaches. In 6 days, God made all things. On the fifth day, he made the beast of the fish of the sea and the birds of the air. On the sixth day, the beast of the field and the things that creep on the earth. And these include every animal that was ever made. Now you say, well, if that's so, why doesn't the Bible say anything about dinosaurs? If they really existed during Bible days, certainly men would have noted them and said something about them. Well, I think they did. Do you know that the first account of the animal creation in Genesis 1:27, where it says God created great whales and every living creature that moves, which the waters brought forth abundantly, really says this. The word whale in the Hebrew is tanin, which in other parts of the Bible is translated dragons. So what it really says is that God created great dragons and every living creature that moves, which the waters brought forth abundantly. And later he created the beast of the field and so on. And I believe that either Noah took dinosaurs on the ark, probably baby dinosaurs maybe, or else they were able to survive the flood. Many of them, of course, were marine animals, and perhaps they could survive. But there is some evidence that they survived the flood and long enough for men to make these pictographs of them on the canyon walls and the cave walls and so on. And one passage of Scripture, and then I'll close because the time is gone. In Job chapter 40, I think, speaks explicitly about the dinosaur. That crooked serpent that lives in the sea, Isaiah 27, says is Leviathan, the great dragon. But that's not only a symbol of Satan, but we read in the 104th Psalm, for example, that along with the ships and the other fishes in the great and wide sea, there goes Leviathan playing in the sea, the writer says. Leviathan, the strange animal known as Leviathan, living in the sea, the great dragon in the sea. And also here in Job chapter 40 is mentioned another great animal called Behemoth. Behemoth in chapter 40 and Leviathan in chapter 41. And I think Behemoth is a land dinosaur and Leviathan a marine dinosaur. But the commentators, of course, they've had trouble with these because they're trying to think in terms of present-day animals. And so they usually say that Leviathan is a crocodile and that Behemoth is an elephant or a hippopotamus. The Bible I have here says elephant. Many say hippopotamus. But when you read the description of these animals, they're not describing an elephant or a crocodile. Let me read Job 40, verse 15. God is speaking to Job here. God has come down, terminating the discussion between Job and his friends, and God is calling their attention to his great work of creation, which, of course, is exactly the message men need today. And he told Job, he says, "Behold now," in verse 15, "Behemoth, which I made with thee." Now, this is a real animal. God says, "Look at him, Job. He's a great animal. You ought to see something of my power here. Behold now, Behemoth, which I made with thee. Same day I made thee. He eateth grass like an ox. Lo, now his strength is in his loins, and his force is in the navel of his belly." Now, what you want to think about, you see, is this great brontosaurus, not the elephant, but great brontosaurus with the long, long neck and the long, powerful tail and walking around in the swamp water, drinking up the water and eating the grass in the swamp and so on. Great animal. Think of that when you read this. His strength is in his loins, his force is in the navel of his belly. He moveth his tail like a cedar. Now, meditate for a moment upon the tail of an elephant and compare, or a hippopotamus. He moveth his tail like a cedar, the sinews of his stones are wrapped together, his bones are like strong pieces of brass, his bones are like bars of iron. No wonder we find so many dinosaur bones preserved, maybe. He's the chief of the ways of God, the greatest animal God ever made. He that made him can make his sword to approach unto him. Man couldn't possibly destroy the dinosaur by fighting him, but he that made him can. The mystery of the extinction of the dinosaurs is resolved in terms of the great flood, and then the changed climate and so on resulting from the flood. Surely the mountains bring him forth food where all the beasts of the field play. He lies under the shady trees in the cover of the reed and the fens. The shady trees cover him about. With their shadow the willows of the brook compass him about. He drinketh up a river and hasteth not. He trusteth that he can draw up the Jordan into his mouth. He taketh it with his eyes. His nose pierceth through snares. Can't trap him, but God can deal with him. And just as God can deal with that which he symbolizes, the great dragon, that old serpent, the wicked one who deceives the whole world, and this whole monstrous system of evolution which is centered in the fossil record, can far better be understood in terms of God's judgment upon a world in sin. And here I'll close with 2 Peter 3, in which the evolutionary uniformitarian philosophy is brought before us as characteristic of the intellectuals of the latter days, when he says they will be saying all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation, but this they willingly ignore, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. The world that then was, the world before the flood, with all of its great beauty and great vegetation and animal world, all of this, with all the world of rebellious mankind, under the direction of Satan, who was trying to corrupt the whole world, deceive the whole world, all of that world that then was, being cataclysmically overwhelmed with water, perished. And the remains of that world are preserved for all men to see for all time to come in the sedimentary rocks of the crust of the earth. Rather than teaching us about the evolution of life by natural processes over long ages, therefore, this great record of the fossils, including the dinosaurs, really tells us about God's great sovereign power and judgment, and at the same time, God's wonderful grace, because those who trusted God were preserved through those awful days, just as we can be also today, by the wonderful grace of God in Jesus Christ. Thank you.